Okay, we are going to get started right away. My apologies not for not having a shiur last week, but I was in Israel, and that was a little bit more of a challenge because of the time and family obligations. But we are back in business. All right, last week we started a study of what I called splitting the sea 2.0, meaning the hang on a second, I just want to put my phone on do not disturb. Meaning the story of the splitting of the Yarden, which is very reminiscent and very parallel, very similar to the splitting of the sea of the Yamsuf at the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and we suggested that that's actually intentional. In fact, the text itself makes it clear that part of the purpose of splitting the sea was Achel gadelcha be'enei kol Yisrael. I will increase your greatness in the eyes of all of Israel, much as after the splitting of the sea, the Torah describes as Ve'yaminu ba'Hashem uve'Moshe avdo. It was kind of this enabling moment for Moshe. God, they trusted Moshe, they trusted God and Moshe, his servant,
That's
just
not it.
as Kriyat Yamsuf enabled Moshe to emerge as the leader of Israel in the eyes of the people. So too, the splitting of the sea of the Yarden would do a similar kind of elevation of Yeshua's status in the eyes of the people. We saw last week a parallel. We looked at that in terms of the parallel of the third episode, similar episode, namely Eliyahu splitting of the Yarden and Yehoshua's disciples similarly splitting the Yarden as a kind of a parallel to both Yeshua and Moshe and Moshe's role in Yetziat Mitzrayim. That really was part of our analysis of the text, which identifies several different reasons for why it was important to split the Yarden and enter into the land of Israel in this fashion. And I think we identified five different reasons, and we're going to explore them in more depth today. And so let me go right into the share screen. You should be able to see my screen now, correct? And I have all of you on my second screen, so if you keep your cameras on, I get to continue to see your faces, which is always helpful. And so in this text itself of the splitting of the Yarden, there are at least five different reasons given for why it was important to enter the land of Israel in this fashion. We referenced a moment ago one that appears in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Zayin, namely, "Vayomer Hashem Yeshua Yom Hazeh Achel Gadelcha Be'enei Kol Yisrael." I will magnify you in the sight of all Israel, meaning they will know that Kasher Hayiti Im Moshe Yemach. It's a direct parallel between you and your relationship with Moshe, and the eyes of the people shall trust that. There is a couple of other explanations as reasons given for the splitting of the sea of the Yarden as well, and some of them again parallel Kriyat Yamsuf. There is the reference at the end of Perek Daled. Forgive me for going quickly, but this is just a review. The end of Perek Daled. There's a series of verses that seem to highlight this as well. Leman dat kol ameh haaretz et yad Hashem ki chazakahi, that all the nations of the world will know, the nations of the land shall know that God's hand is great. That also was very similar to the language used in Yetziat Mitzrayim, all the plagues. Leman dat tedakin kashem kelokeinu, leman tedakin Hashem bekerav haaretz, leman tedakin ki Hashem haaretz, or all the references in Yetziat Mitzrayim in the story of the plagues of Egypt. But there is this constant refrain of that the purpose of showing God's hand and the strength of God's hand miraculously in this fashion is for the nations of the world to see it, to understand it, and to fear it in a sense. That continues directly into the beginning of Parakeh. Vayikishmoa kol malchaya amuria sheba'eva hayarden yama v'chol malchaya knani asher al hayam at asher hovish Hashem et me hayarden v'pnei b'nei Yisrael. When all the nations of Canaan and the Amorites heard how God had dried out the Yarden before Israel, Their hearts melted and they had no longer any strength or courage against Israel. Very similar to the phrase that is found in Shirat Hayam. Shamu amim yegazun chil yochaz yochaz kol yoshvei plashet. That fear and trepidation kind of embraced, overwhelmed all of the nations of Canaan, much as it says here. In fact, I'll show you those. You say them every day, but I'll show you those psukim just very quickly in Shmos Perek Tetvav, which is Kriyat Shirat Hayam, starting with Pasuk Yedaled. Shamu amim yegazun chil achaz yoshvei plashet. The people heard, they shouted. They fear, dreading, overwhelmed them. Az nivhalu alufei Edom, the chiefs of Edom were terrified. Ele Moab yochazim ra'ad, the elders of Moab were trembling. Namogu kol yoshvei Canaan, the hearts of the Canaanites literally melted away. Tipol alehem imata v'facha bigdol zvacha yidmu ka'aven, they fell silent as stone. And that's exactly what we are describing in this story in the text of actually, let's do it this way. Go back to Yeshua Parakei. The Vayimas Levavam Beloy Abom Ruach Mipnei Bnei Israel. The hearts of the Canaanites were melted. What I didn't address is why it was necessary to recreate that kind of trepidation amongst the nations of Canaan, but you're all familiar with the story of Amalek. Right? You're familiar with the famous Midrash that at the end, right after Kriyat Yamsuf, literally the next chapter, Amalek comes and attacks, and Chazal offer the mashal, the metaphor, or the parable, if you will, of a boiling bath. Parable that this can be compared to is a boiling bath of water into which no creature is able to descend. A ruffian came and leaped into it, and even though he was scalded, he cooled it down for others. The Medrash is jumping, is picking up on the phrase by Amalek, where it says "Asher karcha baderach," that they happened to appear along the way, that they came by happenstance. But it also plays on the word "kar," karcha, kar. They cooled you off by attacking. Similarly, once Bnei Yisrael crossed the sea, Kara Hayam b'fneim, God split the sea before them. Nafal pachdan al kolomot. Israel was now in a position where they were untouchable. The fear and dread that emerged after that embraced all of the Canaanites after the story of the Kriyat Yamsuf, az nivhalu alefei Edom. Kivan sheba Amalek. Once Amalek attacked, literally in the next chapter. Amalek was defeated. But nonetheless, they cooled off Israel. Suddenly, they were no longer invincible. Suddenly, Israel was vulnerable. And we can all make the analogy in our minds to contemporary events. Not hard to do. Once we are attacked, even if we are victorious at the end of the battle, the fact that we have been identified as vulnerable, that enables others to step into that role as well. That was exactly what happened at after Kriyat Yamsuf, and so by attack of Amalek. And so, to borrow from a contemporary terminology, in a sense, it was necessary to reestablish the deterrence of what had been created after Kriyat Yamsuf, and therefore the need again to split the sea and recreate that sense of power and fear in the eyes of the Canaanites. So that's one explanation that has been given in the text as to why this was necessary. The other interesting observation about the splitting of the sea is, if I go back to the end of chapter 4 for a moment, sorry for going quickly, but I'm assuming if I go too fast, just stop me, because I I'll just keep talking until, but there is a reference at the end here, the same phrase, Leman dat kol amei ha'aretz. Somebody can just keep an eye on the chat if somebody asks for the sources, just repost if you don't mind. The reference here, Leman dat kol amei ha'aretz, et yad Hashem ki chazakahi, right? The peoples of the Canaanites will know that God's hand is strong. That's one explanation. But then there's a continuation. Leman yiratem et Hashem elokechem kol yamim, so that you will fear God as well. That the reference to the story of the splitting of the sea isn't just for the Canaanites, but also a sense of fear and trepidation and understanding Yirat Hashem, understanding of the power of God here. And Israel is in a unique position with regards to Kriyat HaYarden that gives them that sense of awe and power, of God's awe and power in this regard. I'm not sure we spent time discussing it last week. I thought I would, or last year, just pick up here the fact that the sea splitting and the Yarden splitting are different. They happen differently. The sea splitting, when we talked about the notion of walking on the bedrock of the sea, the yabasha of the yam, and the water split to the right and to the left. That was by Kriyat Yamsuf. In the case of the Yarden, it happened differently. If you go back to the beginning of the story, beginning of Perek Gimel, actually, towards the end, the amdu hamayim hayordim milamala, the waters that came down from above were blocked off like in a dam. They stood, kamu ned echad, and they stood like one heap. Instead of Kriyat Yamsuf being split apart, they kind of was just dammed up at one end. The question is where hachek meod meadam ha'ir, very far away from them, adam ha'ir, from a place called Adam ha'ir. Asher mitzad tzortan, v'hayordim al yam ha'arava, and the waters would continue down into the Dead Sea, Yam HaMelech, and they would continue, and so the people could pass through. And where did they pass through? They passed through opposite Yericho. Ha'am avu neged Yericho. Very interesting reference. I don't know if they have a map here. Do they have a map here? No. Okay, I'll show you a. We can see it a little bit. On this map, Israel is crossing over opposite the area called Yericho. And where this Adam Ha'ir is, you don't see it on this map. I'll show it to you on the sources. It's interesting because of how far it is from them. If you take a look at this map here, Bnei Yisrael are crossing over by the Yarden, opposite Yericho, Gilgal, Yericho, down here, Arvot Moav, Evo Shittim, that's where they encamp. This is the area where Israel crosses the Yarden. Adam Ha'ir is at the intersection of the Yabok River and the Jordan River. Right here along that area, there's a bridge there today called Gesher Adam. If you're familiar with it, it's one of the border crossings to Jordan. Now, this particular area is going to be important because it is the beginning of the road that leads to Shechem, which is specifically the road that is described in Chumash for the purpose of establishing the monument on Har Gerizim and Har Eval and the blessings and the curses. The Psukim there describe, hold them up, let me just make sure I have them. No, that's the wrong one. Okay, wrong set of Sukkim. Let's just do this quickly this way. The stones that were set up on HaGrizim and HaRevo are described in the Torah itself in terms of where they are. It's also an odd description. Vayakiv yechad Hashem al kach la'aret asher atav Hashem al mishta v'natata tabracha la'agrizim v'taklala la'areva. When you enter the land of Israel, you will, and we'll talk about this whole ceremony in a moment, you will place the stones on, and the blessings and the curses on HaGrizim and HaEval. Where are they? Halohema be'ever ha'yarden. They are on the other side of the Jordan. Acharei derech mevoa shemesh. After the road that heads westward, the road of the setting of the sun. In the land of Canaan, Yoshev Barava, Mul HaGilgal Etzel Elonei More, opposite Gilgal, near the plains of the oak of Moreh Elon Moreh, which is another name for Shechem. Ki atem ovrim et Yarden levo leveshet et haaretz, etc. So there is this notion that they're going to be heading to Elonei Moreh or Elon Moreh, which is near Shechem, and there is HaGrizim and HaRevo. They're here in Gilgal. They're down here crossing the Yarden. So how do they know where this area of Shechem, Elon Moreh, HaGrizim and HaRevo is? As it happens, this road called Derech Mavor Shemesh starts at Adam Ha'ir. It starts at that intersection of the Yabok River and the Jordan River. So what's possible, and again, this is in conjecture, is that the reason the water split the way it did, which was to dam it up at one end, but not next to where the camp of Israel was, but far from them, all the way up to Adam Ha'ir. And you dam up the water there and allow the rest of the water to flow down, what you end up is this giant wall. But for that wall to be visible to the Bnei Yisrael that they're crossing, that wall is 20 plus kilometers north of them. You need a wall of water tall enough to be seen throughout the entire region. Because I'll have a debate in the Gemara in Sota whether or not that wall was, and the height of that wall, whether it was 12 mil or taller. I gave you the reference in the source page here. What was the height of the water? One opinion says it was 12 mil, 12 mil, or 12 mil, corresponding to the size of the camp of Israel. And there's another opinion that says that the water was even taller than that, 300 mil tall, whatever the possible exaggeration, but the idea was that it was very tall. The question is, why is it necessary to split the water here? Why couldn't the waters be split a little bit further south? And I haven't seen this discussed in the Mefarshim, but I'm going to offer a conjecture. The Bnei Yisrael are crossing the Yarden here. They will eventually have to get to Shechem, HaGrizim and HaRevo, at the end of this western road that goes from the Jordan River to Shechem. But they're not near Adam Ha'ir. They're down here in Yericho. How do they know how to get there? Well, the answer is that God showed them, almost pointed with a finger, to exactly where that road began by splitting the Yarden north of them at Adam Ha'ir, as if to say, here's the road that's going to lead to Shechem. Right? We're going to split the water, and that large pillar of water is now almost like an arrow pointing at Adam Ha'ir, pointing at the road that leads to Shechem, Derech Mavor HaShemesh. So now Israel knows where to go.
At the same time,
the impact that that kind of enormous wall of water creates 25 kilometers north of them, a wall of water several miles high that they can see, you begin to understand why the text says that the part of this purpose of splitting of the sea, of the Yarden, was leman yiratem et Hashem Elokechem, so that you will develop that sense of fear and trepidation of God and God's power. And Yad Hashem ki chazaka, he the Yad chazaka, not only Egypt, but also Israel.
I heard a...
I'm going to stop there in this context, and we're going to have the next observation, but I think that is also an important reference point, that this map highlights where they cross versus where the water was stopped up.
I heard a different reason.
Sorry, say that again?
I heard a different reason that some 2 million people were crossing the Jordan. They couldn't have crossed in a very small area right around the Jordan, that they actually crossed over a period of quite a few kilometers, that they actually crossed over that whole section there in between.
That's possible.
That's
Hard to imagine. It's a hard to, the
what
problem
I
with that,
got.
I hear that. The problem with that explanation is that they do encamp around Jericho. The camp of Israel is encamped in this area around Jericho. They're not encamped across this whole area of the Yarden, of the Jordan Valley. So, however, we've worked out the numbers, and the numbers are a whole different subject of and discussion. Whether they're literal or exaggerated, or whether or not, like, I'm not going to get into all of the numbers issues, but when they encamp, they surround the city of Jericho. So to argue that the camp of Israel was so large, because I'll say it was the entire camp of Israel was 13 mil by 13 mil, meaning it was a smaller area. And so I'm going to leave it as an open question for now. Possible that they spread out as they crossed the Jordan, but it's also possible if they crossed here, but the wall of water stood there. That's certainly what the Gemara seems to imply. I'm going to leave the issue of the relationship between Yeshua and Moshe. We spoke about that last week at length, and I want to focus on the last two references to why it was necessary to split the Yarden in this fashion and what was achieved by it. And I want to actually start with a really what to us would sound like a somewhat of an odd reference. In the context of the text, I think it is, well, we'll see. Let's go back to Yeshua, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tet Vav. Ukivona se Aharon al Ad Yarden. It's the Kohanim that carried the ark, touched the water of the Yarden. I'll come back to the phrase in a second. The water stood as a pillar very far from Adam Meir, at Adam Meir, Stephen Cree, I'm not going to get into. And they crossed at the opposite Jericho. Look at this phrase here that I skipped. V'hayarden male al kol gdotav kol yemei katzir. The Jordan River was overflowing its banks all the time of the harvest. Now, you've all been to the Yarden in recent years at some point or another, I hope. And even at its highest level, to describe the Jordan River as overflowing its banks, and to be large enough that if you dam it up at one place, it creates a wall of water miles high so that Israel can cross over, you'd have to assume that the Jordan River was much larger at that time than it is today. Now, there are several reasons for that. Some are very simple. Today, the Jordan River is even smaller than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago because we keep diverting the water and the Dead Sea is shrinking. The Kinneret is lower than it used to be, though the Kinneret feeds into the Yarden. There are rivers that flow into the Kinneret from the area of Taldan and the Hermon. And at the end of the day, the whole region has less water than it once did. Right? All of that is, although now with all the snow and rain in Israel, who knows, maybe it'll fill up. But that is certainly true that the waters of the Jordan River are smaller, less significant today than it was a short period of time ago. Certainly, if we're talking about thousands of years, it would have been much larger at that time. And we can see it from the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea itself is shrinking because the water is drying, is not flowing into it as it once was. That's true. How big was it and how much bigger it was than it is today? That's an interesting question. Actually, and I want to take you on a small journey. We'll take a to look at a couple of things. I want to come back to this Adam Ha'ir map for a moment. Nachal Yabok, the Yabok River. Take a careful look at this river line. Along the banks of the Yabok River sits a city. There's two cities, Penuel and Sukkot. But there's another city that sits on the Yabok River that we first encounter when Yaakov returns from the house of Lavan, and he encounters Lavan along the banks of the Yabok River, and he sees there a camp of angels, and he calls the place Machanaim. Is the name Machanaim familiar to you, besides the ball game that kids like to play? Right. It's a very important city along the banks of the Yabok River, called Machanaim. That's a reference point. We'll come back to what Machanaim is about in a second. But I want to show you a couple of verses in Chumash. This is a pasuk in Vayikra Perek Chavav. V'natati shalom ba'aretz, I will give you peace in the land as part of the blessings. U'shchatev u'shchatchavtem ve'en machrid. There you shall dwell, you will not be afraid. And I will remove all of the wild beasts from the land. Wild beasts. What are wild beasts in the land of Israel? Okay. Park that for a second. Shmot Chaf Gimel. Shmot Chaf Gimel is describing the beginning of the conquest of Israel. This is the story in Shmot, in the end of Parshat Ki Tisa, after Chet HaEgel, where God says that you will come into the land. I will send some kind of a messenger or tzira, whatever that tzira is, before you, and he will expel the Canaanites before you in order that you shall have an easier time to conquer the land. But I will not drive them out before you in 1 year. Meaning, I won't drive them out quickly. It'll take a little bit of time. Because what happens to a land if it remains uninhabited and empty? If I drive out the inhabitants before you, and then you haven't had a chance to come in and settle and be able to expand into that land, it remains empty and unsettled. And what happens to land that becomes unsettled is that it is taken over by the animals. We've seen it all the time. There was a whole discussion after COVID when people would stop walking, traveling and engaging in just life in cities, that there was an increase of animal life in the cities that were vacated because people were not going out. That's a recent story. So certainly that was true at that time as well. Lo gashenu mipanecha b'shana achat, pen tiyeh ha'aretz shmama v'rabah alecha chayat hasadeh. Lest the land become desolate, be desolate, meaning uninhabited, and beasts of the field multiply against you. So I have two references here to a concern about the beasts of the field. What are these beasts of the field? What are these wild chaya ra'ah in Perek Chavav Vayikra and chayat ha'sadeh in Shmot Chav Gimel? What are these referring to? So let me take you now fast forward from Chumash, almost 1,000 years, right? Through the whole time period of, no, almost 400 years. Through the whole time period of Sefer Shoftim and into Sefer Shmuel, towards the end of the story of David, into the battle of David and Avshalom, his son, rebels against him. And there we find a major battle between the forces of David, led by Yoav ben Tzruya, and the army of Avshalom, who runs across the Jordan River to escape from David's army. And that battle takes place, Vayitzeh ha'am ha'sadeh likrat Yisrael. I'll give you some information that's not here. It's in the previous paragraph, but that's fine. This people went out to get to battle on the other side of the Yarden in a place called Ya'ar Ephraim. Now, Ya'ar Ephraim, the actual location where this battle takes place, is in the city of, or on along the edge of the city of Machanaim. Machanaim is where Avshalom had fled to. Just want to see if that's referenced here. Yes. V'David ba Machanaima. In the previous parak, it says, David came to Machanaim, v'Avshalom avar ta Yarden hu v'chol ish Yisrael imo. So David and Avshalom cross the Yarden, and they go to a place called Machanaim, which, as I said to you before, you can see on this map, maybe. Here's the Abok River, Pnuel and Sukkot along here. Okay, it's not listed, but essentially Machanaim is along the edge of this Yabok River. They cross over the Jordan, and along the banks of the Yabok River lies the city of Machanaim. It's also, okay, well, we'll get to that in a second. So back to Perek Yerchet, and the war begins. Vayetze ha'am ha'sadeh likrat Yisrael batia mechama b'yar Ephraim, in the forest of Ephraim. Vayinakfu sham am Yisrael lifnei avdei David, the army of Avshalom, referred to as the army of Israel, because the northern Israel, were defeated by the army of David. 20,000 people died in that battle. The battle was spread out over the land. The forest devoured more people that day than the sword. How did the forest devour more people than the sword? So there are those who suggest that it meant that the armies had a hard time navigating in the forest, and so the fact that they were in the forest made the battle worse. But most of the Mefarshim suggest that it's simply a fact that the armies faced two dangers. They faced the danger of the opposing army, but also they faced the danger of being in a place where there were wild animals. There were wild animals in this place. This is in a place called Yar Ephraim. Yar Ephraim is not a forest. As Yirmiyahu describes it, Hine ke'arye ya'ale migo'on ha'yarden, the lion shall come out of the prides of the Jordan Valley, of the Yarden River. The pride, you know, remember the movie Lion King with the pride lands, right? Go'on ha'yarden, are you talking about a jungle, an African jungle on the banks of the Jordan River? Is that what we're talking about? Right? That seems to be what we're talking about. We're talking about a forest that was big enough and wild enough in terms of animals to sustain an entire life of jungle animals that were a concern lest they penetrate into the residential areas of the land, hence the reference to Chayat HaSadeh in Shemot Chav Gimel and Chayah Ra'ah in Vayikra Chav Vav, that in fact were able to pose a real danger to an army as they fought in the forest or the jungle of Yar Ephraim. Yar Ephraim is an area of a forest, or in this case, describing it as a jungle, on either side of the Jordan River, both the west side and the east side. All of these indications would seem to reflect one fact, and that's really where I was going, which is that the Jordan River had to have been significantly larger in those days than it is today to be able to support on its banks an entire forest, which isn't just a forest, but actually large enough and strong enough to sustain even a jungle-style animals that are in that region. So both from Yirmiyahu, Shmuel, and the Psukim in the Chumash, that seems to be the conclusion of why the Jordan was so much bigger and why it was necessary, therefore, not to just throw a bridge across and wade across, if you will, as you could today, but to actually split it in the fashion and the manner that was done for Kriyat Yamsuf as Bnei Yisrael escaped from Mitzrayim. I'm going to stop here for a second and pause. If there are any questions on this part, because I'm going to go into the last piece.
Just one comment in the story with Elisha and Naaman. I mean, he comes and calls the Yarden this small river compared to where he's coming from.
Correct. Correct. So it's small. So if this question becomes, at what point does it shrink? We can identify part of that from Sefer Yoshua. Because one of the things that Yoshua does is he instructs Shevet Ephraim to begin to cut down the forest in order to establish a region for them to settle. So it's quite possible that over the course of time, starting here, but over the course of time, post-David as well, the forest continues to be shrunk. And as that shrinks, the waters of the Yarden may have shrunk as well. So you are correct. It may be, and it's also small, certainly smaller than the Euphrates. It always has been. Even at its largest point, it would have been smaller than what the Euphrates and was at that time. So that is a valid observation. Okay. Which brings us to really the last piece of this discussion. Which we haven't addressed yet much at all, and that is what I would say the last reason for why it was necessary to split the Yarden in this fashion. And that's a story that's embedded, pardon the pun, into the splitting of the Jordan, namely the story of the stones. So that's our last piece, and we'll start it today. We'll see how much time we have, and if not, we'll continue it, Bezrat Hashem, next week as well. So let's go back to Yeshua Perek Gimel. And now I want to pick up specifically on the story of these stones. What were they? What were their purpose? What happened to them? It's sort of a sub story within the story. So they split the sea, and the way they split the Jordan is the Kohanim would carry the ark into the Jordan River. I want to Yoshua instructs the Kohanim, we're carrying the Aron, to stand at the edge of the waters of the Jordan and literally touch the waters with their feet. This is, you will know from this story and from these events that God is, living God is amongst you, etc. As the Ark of the Covenant of God passes over the Yarden, Kulachem Shne Asar Ish Mishiftei Israel, Ish Echad Lashavet, designate 12 people from the tribes, assuming one leader from each tribe. Bayak Noach Kapot Ragleah Kohanim Nosei Aron Hashem Adon Kol Haaretz B'meh Hayaden, as the feet of the Kohanim touched the waters, and the waters were split, Meh Hayaden Yikartu Namayim Yodim Milamala V'yamdu Nedechad. Right? So what are these people for? Wait a second. So, okay, we're continuing the story. The people crossed the yard, begin to travel from the tents. The Kohanim touched the sea. As the edge of the feet of the Kohanim touched the water. We're back to the, right, I'm still waiting to hear what to do with these 12 people that were so designated. The water, the overflowing its banks. The water stood one pillar from Adam Ha'ir. I'm still waiting. What do I do with these 12 people? Priests that bore the ark touched the dry land, and all the people passed on dry land. ויהי כאשר תמו כל גוי לבוא את העדן, ויאמר השם אל יהושע, קחו לכם מן העם 12 אנשים. Okay, now we're back to those 12 people. So the 12 people were pre-designated before the story began. Now the Kohanim have, but we don't know for what purpose. Now the Kohanim have touched the waters. The waters have stopped the big pillar up at Adam Meir. Now they're waiting. And Yeshua instructs the Kohanim to turn to those 12 pre-designated leaders of the tribes. Ish echad, ish echad mishavet, v'tzavu otam lemor, and command them, say, Su'u lechem mizeh mitoch ha-yarden, take from here, from where the Kohanim are standing, mimatzav ragle ha-Kohanim, from the place where the Kohanim's feet are standing, hachin shtem esrei avanim, prepare 12 stones, vavartem otam mimachem, and take them with you. So these 12 stones now come from the bed of the Jordan River. This is that's probably the most important fact in this story. These 12 stones are hewn out of the riverbed of the Jordan. What will we do with these 12 stones? For now, bring them to where we encamp. What we do with them, he doesn't say. They are temporarily, just hold on to them. We'll need them. Now he calls those 12 people that we prepared, had pre-designated, but without telling them what their purpose was. Go into the Jordan River. Each one of you take a stone, one stone for each tribe of Israel. Lemispar shiftei b'nei Israel. So that this will be a sign for you. These 12 stones, what we do with them, we haven't yet said, but they will be a sign for you and for your children. What are these stones meant to be for you? And you will say, which of course is reminiscent of the language of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Ashenichutu mimei ha-yarden mipnei Aaron b'rit Hashem, as these were taken from the bed of the Jordan River when God split the waters of the river, ba'avoh ba'yarden nichutu me'ayarden, the Jordan rivers were cut off, v'ayu avanim ha'ele lezikaron livnei Yisrael ad olam. These stones shall become a zikaron, a memorial for the children of Israel forever. So they become a kind of mazkeret or a monument to the story of the splitting of the sea, of the Jordan. Right? But you can't, how do you create a monument out of the splitting of the Jordan River? You take stones from the bed of the Jordan River, and which you can only get to when the waters have dried out. You carve them out, you take them, and now what we do with them, we'll see, but they become a symbol, a mezkeret, for the split, the story of the Yarden altogether. They take these 12 stones from the Yarden, in accordance with the number of the tribes of Israel, namely 12. And they took them to the place where they lodged, the camp, temporarily, and placed them there. And in addition, Yeshua set up a smaller monument of 12 stones where the Kohanim's feet were standing on the dry bed of the Jordan River, and there they remain till this day. In other words, there are two sets of 12 stones. There's a set of 12 stones that Yeshua establishes in the Jordan River, which no one will ever see, because the waters will be restored, and they'll flow over the stones, and you'll never see them. But there's a parallel set of 12 stones, which the heads of the Shvatim took out of the Jordan River and are holding on to temporarily, waiting further instruction. והכהנים נעשה אהרון עומדים בתוך העדן עד תום כל הדבר שצבא השם את יהושע לדבר על עם ככל שצבא משה את יהושע וימהרו העם ויבואו. The Kohanim are standing there until all of Israel crosses over, and as they finish crossing over, ויעבור אהרון השם הכהנים לפני העם, the ark also passed over, and when God, half of Menashe, also came, because they are chamushim, they are the chalutzim, they came armed, they're going to be the front lines, k'arba'im elav chalutzei tzava, and the rest of the story continues, as we have discussed. The water gets restored, and they come to the camp opposite Jericho, on that first night. What do they do with the 12 stones? So then we come back to Pasuk Yutet. V'am alumina yaden v'esol l'chodesh harishon. The people crossed the Jordan on the 10th of Nisan. V'yachanu b'Gilgal. B'k'tzei mizrach Yericho. And the encampment is in Gilgal. We will be in Gilgal for many years. So not we, meaning our study of Yeshua will not take many years, but they will be in Gilgal for many years. East of Yericho. Ve'et shteim esrei havanim ha'ele, and these 12 stones, asher lakchu min ha'yarden, hekim Yoshua ba'Gilgal. Yoshua set them up in Gilgal. Ha'yomer b'nei Yisrael, lemor asher yishalu menechem macham b'tabletechem, lemor ma havanim ha'ele, when your children will ask you tomorrow, saying, what are these stones? Then what will you tell them? They're a monument, tribute, reminder of the splitting of the Jordan River, and that we crossed onto our land, because they come from the bed of the Jordan River. And therefore, they represent the splitting of the sea. God dried out the waters until you were able to cross over. So clearly the purpose of these stones was set up to be a monument of the fact, and they would stay in Gilgal, at least for now, as a monument to the crossing of the Jordan in the manner of Kriyat Yamsuf style, drying out the Jordan River until they could cross over. There's a parallel set in the riverbed, and now I have 12 of them set as a monument in Gilgal. There is a suggestion, and clearly there. Why are there 12 stones? Because they represent the 12 tribes of Israel. We'll come back to that observation in a second. But there is a suggestion that these 12 stones don't stay in Gilgal. Why do they not stay in Gilgal? Because Bnei Israel have a journey to make. What's the next step after they reach Gilgal, or after they cross over the Jordan? The next step for them, we just read in Dvarim Yud Aleph, Vayakiv Yecha Hashem Alekech Al Aretz Asher Atav Hashem Alev Yishtav Natatat HaBachar HaGrizim Taklalal HaEval. The next step is to go to HaGrizim and HaEval in Shechem. And what are they going to do there? They're going to enact an entire ceremony there on HaGrizim and HaEval. What is the ceremony going to consist of? So if we read the Psukim in Parachav Zion, which is the continuation of the story. When you will, on the day you will pass over the Jordan, part of that ceremony was to take large stones and to cover them in plaster. After the ceremony of Hagrizim and Areval, of the blessings and the curses, to take 12 stones, and actually to take stones, doesn't say how many, take large stones, cover them in plaster, and to inscribe on them the words of the Torah. That these stones upon which were covered in plaster and then inscribed with all the mitzvot of the list of the mitzvot according to Avsad Yagon, or all the words of the Torah. Bayab of Rechemet HaYarden, when you cross over the Jordan, takimu et avanim ha'ela she'onachim et tzeve etchem hayom b'har eval, v'sadut otam basid. Establish them in har eval and cover them in plaster. Uvanita sham mizbeach la'Hashem Elokecha, mizbach avanim, and build an altar, avanim shlemot, to make this altar out of stones, as an altar needs to be, and bring various sacrifices on this altar, and to inscribe on these stones all the words of the Torah. So there is a suggestion made, and again, it's arguable, that there's two sets of stones. One set of stone they stand up in Gilgal when they crossed of the Jordan, but it's also possible that they take the stones from the Jordan, which they established temporarily in Gilgal, and those are the stones which they bring up to Hakadosh Baruch Hu and inscribe on them the words of the Torah. I throw it out. There's a possibility. The Rambam of Horshim suggests it's the same set of stones, and that the establishment of these stones in Gilgal was temporary until they moved them to Har Pizim and Har Ebal. In all cases, and that would mean that there are 12 stones in the monument of Har Pizim and Har Ebal upon which are written the words of the Torah, which would make sense. By the way, it's not the only time you have both a combination of both the Mizbeach and 12 stones. Where else do we have a combination of a mizbeach and 12 stones?
Elio.
Excuse me?
Elio.
We'll get to Elio. You're correct. But I'll get to Elio next. That's going to the far end instead of the closer end.
Yaakov?
No. Oh, well, Yaakov makes a monument of 12 of stones. I'm not sure it's 12, by Gal-Ed. I have to look it up again to see if there are in fact 12 there. There's a medrash about him having taken 12 stones that we were forged into one rock when he went to sleep in Bethel. But if I go to Shmot Perek Chof Daled, Shmot Perek Chof Daled is the immediate aftermath, or a description, another, it's either an alternative description or a follow-up of the events of Mamre HaSinai. It's machloket in Rashi and the Ramban, whether this is it's the end of Parshat Mishpatim, whether it's a repeat of Mamre HaSinai or a separate event related to Mamre HaSinai. But there we find, Moshe Amar Aleha Hashem, Atah Ve'Aron Nadav Avihu V'Shivim Mizikney Yisrael V'Ishtachavitem Merachok, Moshe, Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, 70 of the elders. We see Yoshua in this story as well. Moshe goes into the mount, up the mountain, the rest of the people stayed midway. Moshe comes to the people, he tells them everything that God had said and all the laws. The people answered, "We obey, we will accept whatever God says." Moshe wrote down all the words of God. Vayashkem b'boker, vayiven mizbeach tachat ahar. He got up in the morning and he built an altar at the base of the mountain. Ushtem esrei matzeva, and 12 single stone monuments. Just to be clear, the Gemara articulates this in halachic terms as well. The difference between a mizbeach and a matzeva is that a mizbeach is a construct made up of multiple stones. A matzeva is a single stone monument. You take a stone, you create a matziva. A matziva was never used for sacrifices. A matziva was used as a monument. It was used for libations, never used for sacrifices. For sacrifices, you need a mizbeach. It's a sub-issue, which I'm not going to get into right now, but that's just to understand the terminology. Moshe builds a mizbeach because he's going to offer sacrifices, and 12 stone monuments, Shnem Esrei Matzeva Lishnem Asar Shiftei Yisrael, corresponding to the 12 tribes. And they bring all kinds of sacrifices on the Mizbeach, and Moshe reads them the Sefer Brit, and they, of course, answer famously, Naaseh V'Nishma. He takes the blood of the offerings and the sacrifices that were just made on the Mizbeach. He sprinkles it over the people. Hine dam brit asher karat Hashem imachem, as the blood of the covenant dam brit. And that is the brit of Mamad Har Sinai, which consisted of both sacrifices and the sprinkling of the blood, but also 12 stone monument, Shtem Esrei Matzeva, corresponding to the 12 tribes of Israel. The 12 is very important. Correctly pointed out, somebody mentioned the fact that we have a similar reference in the story of Yoshua on Har Carmel. Yoshua and Har Carmel, the slightly different variation, because Yoshua. Eliyahu. Because Eliyahu actually, Vayomer Eliyahu l'chol ha'am gishu elai, v'yikshu kol ha'am v'yipru et mizbach Hashem arus. They repair the altar that was broken. Not clear what altar was there. V'yikach Eliyahu 12 avanim k'mispar shiftei b'nei Yaakov. He similarly takes 12 stones corresponding to the 12 tribes of Israel. Shvayad v'Hashem elav lemor. And he builds those 12 stones into a mizbeach. So the difference was that it was a mizbeach with 12 stones rather than a mizbeach and 12 stones. But the fact that this mizbeach was made up of 12 stones is also significant, because essentially what's the message of all of these cases? Both Eliyahu and Har Carmel, and the Moshe b'Mamad Har Sinai, who made a mizbech and 12 single stone monuments. And to an extent, Yoshua's message as well. What is the significance of these 12 stones? I think the answer is self-evident. Namely, right, 12 represents
tribes.
The tribes. The unity of the tribes. The unity of Am Yisrael. The sense that we are one people. And that's what Eliyahu was trying to convey, right? That we are all one people. We're not north, south, those who are loyal to the temple in Yerushalayim and those who are loyal to the temple in Dana Beit El or anywhere else, right? We're one people, and therefore we serve one God, not the gods of Baal, but Shtem Esrei Avanim K'mispar B'nei Yaakov, 12 stones corresponding to 12 tribes of Israel. We're all united in this. Similarly, Moshe makes the opposite, right? Takes a Mizbeach, he's going to bring sacrifices and sprinkle the blood, but the grit is with all of the tribes of Israel. Shnei Masar Avanim K'mispar B'nei Yisrael, 12 stones corresponding to the 12 tribes of Israel. Shnei Masar Matzeva, Shnei Masar Shiftei Yisrael. So the fact that Yeshua takes 12 stones, also led by the leaders of each tribe, Nasi Kol Shevet, 12 Ish, 12 Shvatim, 12 people representing the 12 tribes, they take 12 stones, they take it, they establish them as a monument in Gilgal, then maybe also on Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, unclear, but the same 12 stones represent the totality of the tribes of Israel, the unity of the nation of Israel, the 12 tribes. And embedded in the Jordan River sits a monument of 12 stones, although much smaller and covered, and therefore need a second set of 12 stones in order to parallel them and say, these, when you will be asked by your children, Machar, Ma, Havanim, Eila, what are these stones? You will say, these stones represent how God dried out the Jordan River as we crossed. Well, that's only half the story. These stones represent drying out the Jordan River as we crossed, but they also represent something else, namely, the unity of the tribes of Israel. So here's the question I'm going to leave you with. If I look at 12 stones, it doesn't say much at all about the Jordan River. If I look at 12 stones, let's assume for the moment, even if they're in Gilgal, representing the 12 tribes of Israel, what does it tell me about drying out the river, crossing, splitting the river? What's the connection? It's like a non sequitur. If I were to say, okay, what are the 12 tribes, what do the 12 stones represent? I would say it represents the 12 tribes of Israel. What does that have to do with drying, with crossing the Jordan, drying out the Jordan, or splitting the Jordan? How did that connection work, other than the fact that there's a parallel set of 12 stones in the Jordan River that nobody can see? So there is an answer to that question, and I think it's intuitive, but we're going to have to flesh it out in more detail, which is what we'll do next week, which is that what is alluded to here is that it's very possible, it's very easy to look at the Jordan River and say that the Jordan River represents the border of the nation of Israel. And if the Jordan River represents the border of the nation of Israel, how many tribes are there?
Nine and a half.
9.5.
Nine and a half.
So if the 12 stones represents the story or reminds us of the story of the splitting of the Jordan River, what it's really saying is, do not forget that there are 2.5 tribes on the other side of the Jordan. And so in its core, its message is that there are tribes of Israel living on both sides of the Jordan River. There are 12 tribes, not 9. And even though God dried out the river and crossed us over the river of the Jordan, we conquered the land of Israel. That was the practicality of it and the theology of it. But do not ever forget that we are not 9.5 tribes. We are 12. That's the piece of the story that comes from these stones. We're 12, but Dafka, because 2.5 on the other side, and they're part of Am Yisrael. Don't forget that. Now, why that's a necessary message, is it a necessary message, and how that fleshes out, that we're going to look at briefly at the beginning of the shiur next week. I've run out of time for today. But for that, we need to read a story that appears at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, when that question was raised explicitly. Are we a nation of 9.5 tribes? Or are we a nation of 12 tribes? And that was Yeshua's message. The 12 stones representing the tribes of Israel as we cross the Jordan River. Do not think that crossing the Jordan River separated us and isolated us forever from the 2.5 tribes on the eastern bank. We are one nation of 12 tribes. So we will explore that, Be'ezrat Hashem, in much more detail. At the beginning of next week, we'll look at the chapter at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, and then we will continue on to the next story, which is in chapter 5. I will stop here for now and be happy to answer any questions people might have.
Okay, so let's see, how many sets of 12 stones do we have? We have 12 stones that stayed in the Yarden from under the feet of the Kohanim.
Correct.
Then we have a set of 12 in Gilgal, which they had to write down the Sefer Dvarim or the
No,
Mitzvot.
no, 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 no. Wait, no, don't confuse them. There's 12, in the text it says there are 12 stones they established in Gilgal. Period.
Also from the Yarden.
Yes. Then in Chumash, there is a story requiring them to go to Har Gerizim and Har Eval in Shechem and to build a monument of stones upon which the Torah is written. It never tells us how many stones are there. And it's not clear that they are the same stones that were placed in Gilgal. That's a conjecture I was making. I've seen it in some of the articles on Yehoshua, that it's the same stones that Yeshua then moves from Gilgal to Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and upon which he inscribes the words of the Torah. It's not necessarily the same set.
Oh.
Okay? That's a jump. That's not on the
Which
list.
means they stayed in Gilgal.
So if it's not the same set, they stayed in Gilgal.
Okay.
Correct. If they are the same set, which I think my intuition is that they are, then it would make sense. Then it also answers the question of how many stones upon which they wrote the words of the Torah, because that also doesn't say. But again, I'm conjecturing that it would have been 12, because we also have the 12 stones that Moshe had at Mount Sinai and the 12 stones that Yehoshua used at Har HaKamel. And in all of these instances,
Yeah.
every single time, they represent the unity of the tribes of Israel. We are one people of 12 tribes. We are not 12 nations and 12 separate groups.
That's nice.
Nice message. Thank you very much. That was a nice message to end.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm just going to address one question that's in the chat, which is important. Matzevot are forbidden in the Torah. How could Yeshua make matzevot? And this is where I wanted to explain. There's this whole discussion halachically about matzevot. It is forbidden to bring sacrifices on matzevot. But they were not used for sacrifices. They were used for some monument. And that's exactly the point that I was trying to make. All right. I will stop here and we will continue with Zat Hashem next week. Thank you for your time. And in the meantime, have a wonderful rest of Hanukkah.
Thank you so much.
Chag Sameach.